There are some things that are too good to keep a secret. Like how your Amex Platinum card helps you have the perfect trip. I'd like to check into the Centurion Lounge. Or how it seems like you always get those hard-to-snag tables.
Ooh, yum.
And how you get the most out of select can't-miss events. With access to the Centurion Lounge, Resi Priority Notify, and Amex card member benefits at select events, you'll have to share. That's the powerful backing of American Express. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/withAmex.
It's Freddie Prinz Jr. and Jeff Dye back in the ring. Wrestling with Freddie makes its triumphant return for an electrifying fourth season. Hey, Jeff, are you ready to rumble our way into an all-new season of Wrestling with Freddie?
You better believe I have. I've been practicing my body slams, and I'm jacked.
All right, don't go injuring yourself now. We'll be highlighting the best stories and matches of the week in wrestling from AEW, WWE, and have one-on-one talks with the best talents in the world of pro wrestling.
Listen to Wrestling with Freddie on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
MTV's official Challenge podcast is back for another season.
And so are we.
I'm Tori Deal.
And I'm Anissa Ferreira.
The wait is over, guys. All Stars 4 is finally here.
And this season takes it to a whole new level. Old school legends, modern power players, and ex-lovers are all competing in Cape Town, South Africa for the prize of $300,000.
And we're going to be right here along with you fans covering every episode on the podcast.
Listen to MTV's official Challenge podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
The Volume.
Boxing with Chris Mannix is presented by FanDuel Sportsbook. There is no better place to make every moment more than with FanDuel. It's got great odds and markets for Major League Baseball, NBA, NHL, PGA Tour, and so much more. And of course, boxing, which is why you're listening to this. It is awesome with new and existing user promotions. It is America's number one sportsbook. It's safe and secure. You get your winnings fast. It's fun to combine multiple bets from the same game into a same game parlay, and you can discover the most popular SGPs each day right when you log in. If you are new, just download the FanDuel Sportsbook app to get started now. Sign up with the promo code BOXING so that they know that I sent you.
This is Boxing with Chris Mannix.
Oh, somebody punch him in the face.
Anthony Joshua is a composed and ferocious finisher. Watch this.
Andy Ruiz is the heavyweight champion.
Hosted by SI's Chris Mannix.
That was my moment.
Now with interviews, analysis, and everything going on in the world of boxing.
When you have talent, you are given another chance.
Here's Chris Mannix.
All right, well, I love shows where I'm going to fight. And I feel like I'm going to fight on this show. Two of my favorite guys to fight with in the boxing space are Akin Barak, the co-hosts of the DAZN Boxing Show. You can see that every weekday over at DAZN on the app, DAZN.com as well. Fellas, I feel like we're going to get into it today. What do you think? Are we gonna go back and forth a little bit here?
I don't know, because I saw how excited you were at the Barclays Center from Gervonta Davis's performances, so maybe we won't fight so much.
I don't know. Do you like to lose? If you like to lose, let's go.
Oh, wow. See, you guys are like 0 for eternity against me in these types of arguments. But we'll carry on. We'll carry on.
That's delusional. That's delusional, like Rolly after the fight. He needs a rematch.
Well, yeah, we'll talk about Rolly Romero after that fight. That was bizarre as well. I do want to talk about Gervonta Davis, who defended his secondary title at 135. Over the weekend, knocking out Rolly Romero in the sixth round. And, Ak, let's start there. Just your overall thoughts on Gervonta's performance.
Well, I mean, going into that fight, I expected Gervonta to knock Rolly out at some point throughout that fight. I think in the first couple of rounds, Rolly made it a little more uncomfortable than I expected. I felt that Gervonta will kind of take control right away. But then after watching the first round, I understood where he had to take his time. So overall, it's what I expected. Dramatic ending. Gervonta Davis, regardless of the level of opponent that you think Rolly is, he's still holding up to his end of the bargain and being a knockout artist. And he took care of business. Phenomenal performance, but I do understand the folks that say, but who is Rolly? He was a threat, a guy that can punch, and he got knocked out.
Barak, what'd you think?
I think we've seen an experienced guy who went in there and threw over 100 punches that only landed 22 punches, 19%, and he got knocked out. You know, I don't, people are giving him a little bit more credit than he probably deserves. I give him credit only because he went in there and actually tried to execute and he wasn't scared of Gervonta Davis's power. But other than that, no, you landed 3.6 punches per round average on average. I mean, what kind of fight is that? You know, so I just think Gervonta just didn't go anywhere. It was, he stayed plat. He was a plateau because this fight has nothing to do with improving his career. But it was just for bragging rights for somebody who talked his way into a fight.
So, Barack, I take it you don't believe that Rolando Romero is the number two lightweight in the world.
No, no one believes that.
Hell no.
No one believes that except his promoter, which his promoter should believe he's the number two.
No,
you know why? Because his promoter has the number one guy in his mind. You understand what I'm saying? So, no, of course, Rolly is not the number two guy. That's just, you know, that's him promoting. That's making sure that Rolly stays relevant, him saying that.
He doesn't believe that. Leonard doesn't believe that.
Well, I mean, Leonard might believe that. Like, Leonard says some wackadoo things sometimes, and I'm not sure what he believes, Ock. I think Rolly clearly has some power. Like, I'll give him that.
I don't know. But, he has power, but I mean,
he's got a little pop. I mean,
he didn't knock out Marinez. He didn't knock out Gervonta Davis. So he knocked out lesser tier guys. A lot of guys show power with lesser tier guys. Like Triple G showed a whole lot of power. Yeah. And he does have power. His punches hurt. But when he got to a certain level, he wasn't knocking guys out anymore. You know, so at level, maybe Romero is not knocking guys out. We don't know.
I'm not defending Rolly Romero. I'm more pointing out, like, he wasn't, I guess, the stumble bum that a lot of people thought he was going to be coming into that fight. He lasted, whatever. I mean, look, I don't think it's a quality win either. But, like, Ock, did Gervonta show you anything you haven't seen before? Because, I thought he did a nice job being patient. You know, he set some traps there throughout the course of the fight and finally got Rolly to kind of lunge in at an opportune moment, and he landed that shot.
Yeah, I mean, that's what great fighters do, like great boxers, so to speak. They have to make adjustments. And he showed me what he's shown me for the last few years, that he's one of the best fighters in the world, which is why he's still on our pound-for-pound list.
Here we go.
Look, he executed the perfect shot. He timed it. But earlier on, look, regardless of what he said about Rolly not being awkward, he is awkward to some degree, but inexperienced, to Barack's point, very inexperienced. So once Tech saw that he's going to make some defensive mistakes, he executed. And that's what a good boxer does. He didn't get into a firefight with him. I expected Tank to do what he did. I'm not surprised. I'm not so thrilled about the performance because he's supposed to do that.
Brock, did he show you anything you haven't seen before?
No, not at all. I already knew that he can box. You know, I already knew that he had speed, power, footwork, and all of that stuff. And he's more so of a boxer than anything. It's just that he happens to have explosiveness. He happens to be faster than most of the fighters he get in there with. So, no, he didn't show anything. And then when you got a guy who's throwing shots as wide as Rolly, nah. But he did show that he can take a shot from a really big guy. You know, he took a couple of shots. It seems like every time Rolly would catch him flush, he would leave a mark. That's how hard the kid probably punches. So he showed that he could take a shot and not get flustered, but stay with the game plan and execute what he wanted to do.
And Chris, you know, going into this fight, I'm not sure if you remember, but on social media and during interviews, Tank said it, you know, he made it seem as if, I know this guy doesn't belong in the ring with him. When he was going, throwing shots at Mayweather Promotions, he was saying, hey, they're making me fight this clown because this is my last fight on the contract. In other words, I know he doesn't belong in the ring with me. I know that I'm levels above him, but you know what? I'm going to knock this guy out, you know, for bragging rights, like Barack said earlier. So it's not like Gervonta was going into this fight, oh, I'm going to fight such an amazing fighter, and I'm going to prove to the world that I'm, you know, this great. He knew that he was fighting a guy that was less experienced than him, and he would knock him out. So credit to Gervonta for, you know, kind of the way Loma felt. And this might not be the best comparison, but when Loma fought Rigondeaux, he said, listen, man, this guy's a smaller guy. Don't give me all the credit in the world. I knew I was going to be too big for him. So in this case, I knew Tank is like, I knew I was going to be too experienced for this guy. So don't give me all the praise in the world. So I like Tank for that.
All right. So let's talk about what will get Tank credit, what will get him that respect. I mean, like you guys, I sat at that press conference on Saturday and I listened to Leonard Ellerbe. Now, I've known Leonard for 20 years. I actually like Leonard personally, and he has done a fantastic job helping to build Davis into this box office star. I mean, I walked right up to Leonard after the press conference and told him he killed it. But when it comes to Tank's place among the elite in boxing, Leonard just lives in an alternative universe. Like, to our points, Rolly Romero is not a quality win. A quality win cannot come against a guy you are a minus 1,000 favorite against. It just can't. And Leonard sat there, as we said, look, and said Rolly was the second best lightweight in the division. When he said that, I just wanted to pull my hair out. I mean, in no particular order, Vasily Lomachenko, Devin Haney, and George Kambosos are better than Rolly Romero. That's just off the top of my head right now. Romero does not have a single quality win on his resume. To your point, Barack, he should have another loss. I mean, Jackson Marinez beat him a couple of years ago. Marinez was robbed by the judges. And in boxing, you are what your resume says you are. And Romero does not have the resume to be called an elite fighter. Maybe he'll develop it, but he doesn't have it yet. Now, one other thing I want to get to here. Leonard believes he knows more about the business of boxing than I do. And I'm sure he does. But let me just say this. In the 1980s and 90s, boxing, it rivaled like the NFL and NBA for attention. Today, boxing generally draws viewership numbers comparable to MLS and lacrosse. Like, that's just where it is right now with some of these numbers. In 1981, I was looking this up, Sugar Ray Leonard fought Tommy Hearns on a Wednesday. He fought him on a Wednesday night in 1981. Today, boxing events, they start, guys, at these ungodly hours on a Saturday in order to avoid competing with anything but infomercials that are out there. The point is, you cannot be a power broker. And I'm directing this at all promoters, by the way, not just Leonard. But you cannot be a power broker in this sport and hold the haughty position that you know exactly what you're doing. Because this sport, which I love, which you guys love, has been in a state of steady decline for decades now. And these promoters have played a role in it. Now, let me finish here. Back to Tank. Tank, to me, has to decide what he wants to be. Does he want to be an attraction, or does he want to be a fighter? He can continue down this path, don't get me wrong, of beating up on whatever overmatched opponents PBC can dig up. Maybe it's Chris Colbert. Maybe it's Gary Russell Jr. Maybe he can revive Richard Comey from somewhere. I don't know. And he can make a lot of money doing it. I mean, domestically, Tank is a bigger draw than anyone but Canelo, I think, domestically. Globally, I'd only put AJ and maybe Tyson Fury now ahead of him. Tank is that big. And if that's the road you want to go down, fine. No problem. Yes. But you cannot do that and then declare yourself the face of boxing. Tank is going to be 28 years old this fall. Yeah. He has one quality win. That was 5 years ago. I'm almost wrapped here. That was 5 years ago. And that was against Jose Pedraza. I'm just on a roll now. Devin Haney is 23 years old. We're going to talk about Devin in a bit. Yeah. He's going to Australia to fight George Kambosos for the undisputed lightweight championship. That's a fight Tank could have had if he wanted it. But from what I was told, from Team Kambosos, he showed no substantive interest in it. That's a legacy fight, and he didn't really want it. That's why I have been saying, guys, and writing, and now podcasting about it, that Tank needs Ryan Garcia. Ryan Garcia is undefeated. He has exactly as many quality wins as Tank Davis does. If Ryan beats Javier Fortuna in July, he will be available for a fight. Tank, to me, needs to aggressively pursue that fight. He needs to tell his team that a Garcia fight is the only fight he wants before the end of the year, period. Full stop. So, Ak, we'll start with you. I mean, how much of that do you buy into? And do you believe that Tank needs Ryan as much as Ryan needs Tank?
Well, I mean, a lot to cover there, Chris. You touched on a lot of things, so I'm going to try to touch on a few of them. First off,
I was on a roll, man. I was just rolling right there.
Not bad.
As far as Kambosos' team saying that that Tank and his team didn't show any interest in that fight, I mean, I would need proof of that. Tank has shown interest in fighting the winner.
But Tank wasn't going. Tank wasn't going to Australia. You know he wasn't going to Australia.
Yes, but I'm saying I'm not. I don't know if I believe everything that George Kambosos' team says. Anyway, with that being said, you know, Devin Haney and his father, they took a different route into this professional game. A lot of freedom. They created a good relationship with Eddie, where even though he has invested in them, he gave him his blessings to go on and move forward. Tank chose a different route, attaching himself to Floyd, which helped him in his climb to the top as far as notoriety and all of that. So I think they took two different paths. Now, Tank has been, as you know, has been very vocal about wanting all of those fights. And maybe it took this scare, maybe, you know, because I'm getting mixed signals. I don't know if he's with a promotion or he's not. But maybe those statements scared those guys enough to say, okay, let's give Tank the fights that he wants now, because he has the opportunity to walk away from maybe the promotion. And to your point, Chris, he is a major draw. And I've seen it firsthand in different major cities in America. This guy can sell. Doesn't necessarily mean he's going to sell tons of pay-per-view, because for Tank's events, it's a little different. It's more so people want to come out. They want to wear their finest jewelry. They want to wear their finest clothes. It's like going to a club, going to a party. They need to be in the building. It doesn't mean that he's going to sell a million pay-per-views, but there's a lot to be said in setting the record at the Barclays Center in the biggest gate for a boxing event and attendance. So I don't think he needs a Ryan, because there are other big lightweights out there. Like, for instance, the win of Kambosos and Devin. He's already said that he would love to fight the winner of that. That's a huge fight. Now, if you're talking about popularity contests, something that I guess transcends boxing, part of pop culture, yes, Tank Davis and Ryan Garcia is the biggest fight to be made in boxing. And I know I'm saying a lot, because we're right ahead of the Spence Crawford fight that looks like it's going to be made. But as far as popularity and numbers, revenue, just attention, I think that's the biggest fight. But I wouldn't use that word need. I say he should take that opportunity if it presents itself.
Brock, what do you think?
First of all, we're forgetting Lomachenko. The thing about Ryan, you know, I always say that I don't like matchups that have a scapegoat attached to it, that has like an excuse attached to it. Ryan, if Tank was to beat Ryan, what are you going to say, Chris? And a lot of guys like you, they're going to say that Ryan was too young. He wasn't ready. He wasn't experienced enough. But if he beats Loma, there's not much room for an excuse. And that's the fight that we wanted to see happen years ago when Tank was about 22, 23 years old. So I think that's probably the best fight for him to make. Somebody who's showing that he's back, no shoulder injury, and he's on a war path, killing everybody in front of him. I think that's the fight more so that he needs. Now, it's just that Ryan's a bigger fight. Ryan's a bigger name. He has millions of followers on Instagram. So that kind of makes sense. But one thing I want to say is that if you listen to the new Gervonta is calling out names. He's calling out Devin Haney. He's never done that before. You know why? Because he was under the Floyd Mayweather tutelage of being a champion, being the cash cow that we don't call people out. That blueprint doesn't fit well with Gervonta Davis, because he didn't get a chance like Floyd did to fight all of the big names. And that's the problem. And I just want to make a point how when you have a strong father in your life, like Devin Haney has, you get to make certain decisions that grant you the freedom to get these kind of big fights like Kambosos twice. The same thing with Sean Porter. Sean Porter had a strong father in his life who wasn't taking no crap. And look, he fought everybody in the welterweight division. And that's the thing. Gervonta didn't have that. Gervonta just did what he was told. Whoever they put in front of me, I'm going to knock him out. And understand something. When you're a guy who comes from poverty, who's never really had much, and a guy like Floyd comes and change your life, gives you your first car, gives you a stipend, gives you money, takes you around the world, introduces you to a new world, gives you your family money. Like, when somebody does that, you have a lot of loyalty for them. And he had that loyalty for a long time. Just like you, Chris, I'm sure Mike Coppinger put you on. you know, so I know you have a lot of loyalty for him. You understand? But no, I'm joking. But I'm just saying, seriously, the person that puts you on, you have a lot of loyalty. You see the loyalty everybody has for Al Haymon. Ridiculous. They'll turn down millions of dollars just to do what Al Haymon says, rightfully so. Now, it just so happens that in Gervonta's mind, Floyd wasn't giving him the fights that he needed for his legacy. So now he's like, damn, I'm about to be 28 in November. I need to fight these guys. I need to call them out. So now you're seeing them call him out. So I never really faulted him as hard as other people faulted him for not fighting these fights, even though I'm at my wit's end and I'm like, okay, now's the time. But he's showing us that he wants to fight these fights now.
Yeah. So a couple things. You know, it's funny. Eddie Hearn said on Thursday that he received a cease and desist letter from Mayweather Promotions saying Gervonta is still under contract.
Oh, wow.
So this is something that I was told on Saturday night by someone close to Gervonta that he has a year left on his contract, which made me wonder why he was saying all that stuff to begin with, but I don't have the answer to that question. Specifically,
yeah,
though,
according to Eddie, he hasn't reached out to Gervonta. He has clearly said in numerous occasions that once it's confirmed that his contract is up and he is a free agent, we will be making an offer. How could you send a cease and desist?
Well, I would say I think somebody's been reaching out to Gervonta. Somebody on that side of the proverbial street has been reaching out to Gervonta with potential offers. I believe I've heard that from a few people, and I believe that to be true. Now, specifically with Ryan Garcia, I don't disagree with anything you guys are saying about Devin Haney would be great. Vasily Lomachenko would be career-defining. The problem is neither one of those guys is available this year. I mean, Devin Haney is locked into two fights with George Kambosos if he wins this fight next weekend. That's going to gobble up his entire 2022. Theoretically, Lomachenko is available, but I don't know the outcome of this war in the Ukraine, when Loma's going to be available to fight again. I mean, I'm removing him from the conversation for now until there's more information about his future.
There are other guys like Teofimo Lopez is back in camp.
He's gone, though. But he's up. He's got Pedro 40. Campa. He's gone. He's at 140. Like, that's not real. Right now.
Out of everybody else, Ryan is the top rated guy.
And the most available right now.
You mean to tell me Tank Ford at 140? So if a big fight is created against the Teofimo, he won't go to 140? You guys act like that fight is not.
No,
awesome.
I'm just, I don't. Talks.
And also you got another guy from Newark, New Jersey, who's at the Barclays Center on Saturday night, and he's willing to get in with Tank even at 135. I know, right, he wants to unify 130. I'm talking about Shakur Stevenson, who in my opinion is the most skilled fighter in boxing next to Lomachenko. You know, so that's another potential big fight.
Why jump to a 130 fighter when you can fight Ryan Garcia, who's a big 135?
I didn't say 130, though.
But he's a 130 fighter.
I'm just giving you more options. Ryan is not the only option.
No, he's just the best option. He's the best option. He's the biggest option, you know, and I'm just saying that, you know, that's a fight with, when it comes to Stevenson, even though he's very talented and he is a big kid, but he fights at 130, so it's a fight that comes with excuses. You know what I mean? So I'm just saying, why not fight Ryan? I'm just saying that we were forgetting Loma. And if Loma ever makes the decision that he wants to come back to America to train to fight, he's the number one guy that should be fought by Tank Davis. But if it's not for Loma, then the next one in line is Ryan Garcia.
The big thing for Tank Davis is that he has to tell, whether it's Al Haymon, Leonard Ellerbe, whomever, that they have to do a deal that's a cross promotion. There is nothing left at between 130 and 140 on the PBC side of the street. I named a couple of names that you could theoretically throw him in with. If you really want to do an Esau Cruz rematch, I don't want to see that. Like, if you really want to do that, you could make that fight, but the biggest fights have to involve other promoters. So, you know, Tank told Brian Custer, you know, before the fight that it was time to take the training wheels off. What that means is going to your team and saying, look, make a deal. Showtime and DAZN, make a deal to do a pay-per-view involving Ryan Garcia. Ach, if you want to go Teofimo Shakur, ESPN, Showtime, make a deal that involves a joint pay-per-view. That's the big thing, because none of these fights happen, guys, unless there's cooperation by the promoters and by the networks. They just don't. And Ryan And Ryan and Tank, it's right there. They've negotiated that fight somewhat in the past, and I think both sides with Ryan and Tank are ready to do that fight in the future. But it takes teamwork on this one.
I agree with you, Chris. I think that the ball is in Leonard Ellerbe and Mayweather Promotions and Al Heyman's side of the court right now, because we know that Eddie's already numerous of times with Demetrius Andrade, another fighter, has been willing to cross-promote, even fight on another network. And we know that Al Heyman's guys aren't really technically signed with network deals, so they can move around and they can fight other places. So maybe that's what Gervonta and his team is doing. Hey, we know these fights can be made if you really want to make them. I'm here to say I want the fights made, whether it has to be the Zone and Showtime, Showtime, the Zone, one platform, the other platform, this, that, and the third. That needs to be added. And I mean, that needs to be said by Gervonta and his team. And maybe that's what he means by taking the training wheels off, being my own man, calling the shots. Because you and I know, and Barack knows, that if the fighter wants to fight, the fight can be made.
100%. And now that the Zone does pay-per-view, there should be no problem making Tank and Ryan Garcia.
Yeah, I agree. And look, the reason it has to be a joint pay-per-view is because, look, Showtime has invested a lot of money in Tank Davis over the years. They deserve to be involved. DAZN, similarly, the last 5 years, has invested millions in Ryan Garcia. They deserve to be involved. Tank is the bigger star, but Ryan is still a huge draw. His gate in San Antonio was in excess of $1 million. He's fighting at New Staples. I refuse to call it crypto. He's fighting at New Staples.
It's just the crypto either. It's just the sound, right?
Yo, Staples is in the sound. It's so great.
But he's going to do a big number there, fighting Javier Fortuna, who has no fan base. It's going to be all Ryan Garcia fans that are there. These two sides need to get together. It's not as big a fight as Mayweather-Pacquiao, but it's a fight that will exceed 500,000 pay-per-view buys and do a gate north of 10 million. That's not nothing. That's a real number.
It would probably do close to a million sales, in my opinion. I'm predicting that now. If that fight ever happens, Gervonta, Ryan Garcia does a million pay-per-view sales. I'm saying it. I'm saying it now.
You act like that's freaking something crazy. Like,
he just said 500. I'm doubling.
He said north of 500, which is north freaking phenomenal nowadays.
Could be 501. Could be 501.
When's the last time? Listen, let's be honest. When's the last time a fight has done over a million? Triple G, Canelo? Like, come on. These fights aren't doing a million like that anymore. Yeah, and it's been, and I'm including Fury, Wilder. I'm including all of these guys, Errol Spence. So a million, that's saying a lot if it happens.
What are we talking about? Jake Paul's doing a million every time out. Come on, man. He's throwing out numbers.
I don't think the last time.
Last thought on this, and I'm just going to address this to boxing fans in general. Boxing fans need to be boxing fans. They need to stop being promoter fans. They need to stop being network fans. It is wild to me, guys, how many fans on social media say Tank doesn't need Ryan or Ryan doesn't need Tank. I mean, fans just reached into their pocket for what, $80 to see Tank blow out Rolando Romero? Mm-hmm. Ryan, as you point out, Barack, is probably headed for pay-per-view sooner rather than later because now DAZN is in that business. You want to reach into your pocket to see him fight someone on that Romero level? No. Boxing fans just push for the biggest fights, whether it's on Showtime, DAZN, Fox, wherever. If it's on the Food Network, you want to see the biggest fights every single time.
All of those fans are being a fan of networks. They're on the Leonard Ellerbe payroll, maybe the promotion payroll, those fans that are saying that.
Whoever they are, it's just crazy. It's just crazy to me that you are willing to sacrifice the magnitude of the fight because of it matters being on the network. Before I close this topic, where is Tank on your pound for pound list? Ak, you hinted at this. Where is he on the Ak and Barack pound for pound list?
He's still in the same spot. Barack, what do you have him at? Number 9 last or 8? 9? I don't remember, but he's definitely still in the same spot we had him after the Canelo fight. I don't remember, but it's 8 or 9. Barack, can you help me out here? Do you remember?
Listen, Chris. The guy is.
All right, let me go on social media and check on Boxrec.
He's listed as 5'5.5". You know what that means? He's really like 5'4".
Correct.
You know, everybody that's close to the top, an 126 pound division, is taller than him. He's a very small guy who can be comfortable in a 126-pound division, you know. And he moved up to 140 and fought Mario Barrios, who Keith Thurman, who, by the way, Sean Porter said is the hardest puncher he ever fought, harder than Errol Spence, could not stop. But Gervonta can stop him. He's a special guy. He's a very small, special guy. And this is why we have him on the pound-for-pound list. Whether he's number 10 or he's number 8, to me, it really doesn't matter. He's dominant. He's dominant. And Leo Santa Cruz, we talk about him. You say, oh, he was winning. He won 2 rounds. Leo Santa Cruz won 2 rounds on all the judges' scorecards. That's it. Out of the other three. The other 3 rounds he won, and then he got knocked out in the last one. You know, so nobody's beating Tank up. Nobody's hurting him. Nobody's wobbling him. He's dominant, explosive, and he's beating everybody that's there. Now, but if now he doesn't step up, there's a problem, and he has to slide off that list, and that's my opinion.
And I'll add to that, Chris, like, you know, you say what you want about Tank, but if he would have matched up against those guys like Ryan Garcia, like Devin Haney, Kambosos, he's probably going to be the favorite in all of those fights. So if you're going to favor Gervonta in most of the fights in the lightweight division, that says, that lends to, hey, this guy's one of the best fighters in the world, because we see him beforehand beating most of those guys. I'm not saying he's going to go into favorite against.
It's a phenomenal point.
If it wasn't completely wrong, I mean, I wouldn't.
What's wrong about it? What's wrong?
I wouldn't favor Tank against any of those guys.
You wouldn't?
No.
Come on, be honest with yourself.
I think the odds makers will have Tank as a favorite.
Chris, you
over Ryan, maybe a little bit.
I love Ryan Garcia, and I think it's a phenomenal fight. But you would favor Tank, and I know you probably would favor Tank against Ryan Garcia. You wouldn't.
No.
Let's not keep throwing around that phenomenal word. That's three times already.
a lot of phenomenals. I think Ryan.
Who said phenomenal?
Ryan,
was that me?
We all did.
I think Ryan's bigger. I think, you know, he's bigger. And I think his fast twitch power is dangerous. And I think, I Tank is not a volume puncher either. So he's going to have to catch Ryan. I don't think Ryan lunges in the same way a guy like Romero lunges in or is as vulnerable. He is vulnerable in some ways. He's flat-footed, doesn't move his head a lot. But if he fights his fight, I'd favor him. I would. Devin Haney has as much argument for pound for pound as Tank Davis does to me, because he's as skilled as anyone.
The only reason why Devin is not on my pound for pound list, and I'm sorry, I'm not speaking for Barack, but it's only because Tank has won titles in different divisions.
He's won two titles, he's won one, he's fought champions in other divisions.
He's fought guys in other divisions.
And he's knocking guys out. But I agree with you. I think Devin is one of the best fighters in the world as well. And believe it or not, I mean, after this weekend, I see him winning that fight. He's definitely going to be on my pound for pound list after Saturday.
We're just in a great era because every fight somebody gets taken off and somebody gets added. That means we have at least 15 really, really solid, great fighters right now.
I agree. And the back of the pound for pound list is so tough. I mean, Stephen Fulton could make an argument after this weekend that he belongs on that list. Back of mine right now is Shakur Stevenson, and Dimitri Bivol. But you know, it's tough to kind of.
Well, Bivol is on most people's list now.
Yeah, now he is. All right, you mentioned Devin Haney fighting this weekend against George Kambosos in Australia. I think we all give Devin an enormous amount of credit for packing his bags and not only going to Australia, but going to Australia alone. His father, Bill Haney, will not be ringside for that fight, denied a visa to Australia. Ben Davison, who has been a big part of Team Haney for the last few fights, he will not be there either, also with a visa issue. Barack, we'll start with you on this one. Under perfect circumstances, I would favor Devin big in this situation, but he's going to George Kambosos' backyard, and he's doing it with Yoel Judah as his primary corner man. So give me your thoughts on how this fight is going to play out.
Well, basically, they said he has to go fight alone. Like, literally, his whole corner is not even allowed to be there. So we got to commend him, Devin Haney, for that. That's incredible. But when you look at the styles, you look at the styles, you see George Kambosos did great against Teofimo Lopez. He had a sneaky right hand. He also showed a great chin, a great durable chin, and he really didn't get hurt till maybe the eighth round. And then he started to wear down, but then came back, got knocked down in the 10th round, came back in 11th to 12th round. So he showed a lot of durability as well as trickiness and some hand speed as well. But we're talking about somebody who actually has it all. Maybe not crazy punching power, but has everything else, that ring IQ, that discipline. He never leaves his game plan, speed, accuracy, his side-to-side movement. Like, he's just a beautiful fighter in that ring. But we saw against Linares that if you take focus off for a second, you can get rocked. Does Kambosos have that kind of power, that explosive power like Linares has? I don't know. But even so, he got rocked. The end of the 10th round, went back to the corner, kind of regained himself. Came back in an 11th round and didn't hold until a minute later after he got hit again. So he showed durability as well. But you got to edge in the person who never has close fights. The last three of Kambosos' fights were all split decisions. Devin Haney doesn't even come close to split decisions. He barely even loses a round. It's hard to bet against somebody like that.
And Barack, I'll add to that, one of my favorite attributes that Devin has is a la Floyd Mayweather is condition. I mean, I've never seen Devin Haney tired in a fight, which is so important in the championship level when you're talking about 12 rounds. So here's a guy that is probably going to be at the same pace that he was in the first. He'll be the same pace in the 10th round. That goes a long way. So just look, obviously the attributes are there, the skill, the speed, everything that you need to go in enemy territory and get a win. Now, people are worried about enemy territory. People are worried about home cooking because of what we saw with Manny Pacquiao and Jeff Horn. And I talked to Barack about this early in the week. I said, hey, maybe because of that fight, they're highlighted now. You know, the microscope is under those judges and they don't want to F it up. So they're going to try their best to be as fair as possible because they know they're going to be scrutinized for that. So maybe it might be a blessing in disguise that that happened with Manny Pacquiao and Jeff Horn, and Devin gets a fair shake when it comes to that decision. I mean, I'm hoping for that because, you know, to both of you guys' points, this guy has so many things against him. I mean, look, credit to Yoel Judah, who's been in enemy territory when Zab Judah fought Spinks and became, and his son became undisputed welterweight champion of the world. I mean, he's a guy from Brooklyn, New York. He has some toughness to him. So, you know, Devin has some tough people around him, but it's not like having his pops there. So he has a lot of things against him, which I think will add an extra chip on his shoulder, more motivation to shut everybody up, especially George Kambosos.
What kind of sport are we dealing with here where corruption is just okay for us to talk about? And if it was to happen, we're going to be like, oh, see, home cooking. And then we
Well, obviously, you know, it's not okay with us, but you're right. It's sad that we're so cavalier about this.
The most dangerous sport in the world. And we talk about, you know, corruption being okay. Like, lives are changed every single time there is a bad decision. No question about that. I like Devin's chances a lot. And I'm going to tell you why. During the buildup for the Teofimo Lopez fight, it was abundantly clear that George Kambosos had gotten under Teofimo's skin. It was bothering him. Now, some of that had to do with all that Teofimo had going on outside the ring in his own camp, but George got to him, and Teofimo went into that fight trying to blast him out of there in one round and fought the duration of the fight trying to blast him out of there with one punch. Like, that was just his mindset, and it was the wrong approach to take in a fight like that. Watching the clips from Australia this week, it is cracking me up how dismissive Devin has been of George's kind of antics. When George calls Devin a rat and an informant for sending him messages about how to beat Devin Haney, Devin is just shaking his head. I saw one clip.
Yeah.
Oh, sorry. And then I watched something recently where George is talking about his journey and Devin just stops and goes, would you stop? I mean, come on, let it go. Like, George, I understand what George is doing. George wants Devin Haney to come outside of himself, to go out there and try to blast him out of there, because George knows he probably can't win a straight boxing match with Devin Haney. But the traps that Teofimo Lopez fell into. I don't think that Devin's going to fall into them. I think he's going to go out there and box. And if he is just in a boxing match with George Kambosos, to me, this should be like a 9-3, maybe even 10-2 type of fight. I just think Devin is that much better a straight boxer than George Kambosos is.
Yeah, and I also think that a good sign of a confident fighter, he's just talking about what happens inside the ring. He's not talking about, oh, well, when you come over here to this country, then you're gonna have so many people against you. You got that long flight. It sounds like he's using all of that to give himself confidence. I'm talking about George Kambosos. He needs all of that to give himself confidence. You don't have your trainer. You don't have your second guy in there in the corner. So Devin doesn't talk like that. If the roles were reversed and it was Kambosos coming over to America, Devin wouldn't mention a long fight. Devin wouldn't mention the crowd. Devin wouldn't care. You know what he'd say? He'd say, skills pay the bills. Because he is actually a confident guy who talks less because he's very confident. He's like, you know what? Just shut up and let's just fight.
Yeah. I mean, I agree with that, Barack. I mean, I think that, you know, George, a lot of people felt like Teofimo had an off night. And he hears that chatter around and he wants to prove. And he's hyping himself up to so to speak, like, hey, I'm the real deal. That wasn't a fluke against Teofimo. But he can't ignore the fact that Devin is a phenomenal boxer. And I'm throwing that word out there again, phenomenal boxer. I like that angle, you know, and I like Chris's angle too. You know, the fact that he's not getting under Devin's skin, which means Devin is not going to gear off and get out of his game plan. He's going to stick to the script.
He never does.
Skills pay the bills. He always does. And Bill Haney, we had a conversation with him and he brought up a point. Listen, how many close fights have you seen Devin in? And it's true. We haven't seen him in any close fights. Now, granted, you know, he has two, you know, names on his resume that we know are former world champs, credible fighters in Jojo and Linares. But still in all, even those fights were not close, in my opinion. And George has struggled with subpar opponents. I don't want to call names out there, but before Teofimo, this guy has struggled with guys that don't even come close to a Devin Haney boxing ability.
Oh, it's Mickey Bay. It's Lee Selby. I'll throw him.
Yeah, I know, but I like Mickey Bay.
I know. I like Mickey Bay too. I think he's eventually going to fight Devin Farmer maybe sometime this summer.
And Mickey Bay is Team Haney. He spars with Devin. Devin gives him the business. And that's even more help in the camp saying this is what Kambosos has. This is what he does. Like, it just, everything seems to point in Devin's direction. But I think that not having your father, being in Australia, knowing that you have to fight him again, not having Ben Davidson, maybe that kind of lifts it up closer to a 50-50 fight. But
if that affects him.
If that even affects him, exactly. You know what I mean? But we're talking about skills and the eye test. Yeah, Devin Haney.
Yeah, Ak, I would just say one other thing. And Barack alluded to this. The one concern I have with Devin is that he is so obsessed with being a power puncher. Like, he needs you to believe that he's got pop. He gets offended when it's even suggested that he's, quote, pillow fisted or, you know, has soft hands. And I don't think he'll do this, but where he could get into trouble is if he goes out there and just tries to trade with Kambosos, thinking Kambosos can't hold up to him.
I think he's smart enough to know this is not the time to do that. This is not the time to test your power. You got to go to that country, beat this guy every single round, and get out of there with those belts. That's what's on his agenda, in my opinion. And that could affect the fighter. I think Devin will do that with a different type of opponent.
I think that affects every fighter. There's no fighter on this planet that doesn't get affected by that. But it's about to what degree and what extent. Because look, Floyd Mayweather is probably the most disciplined fighter I've ever seen in my life. He probably gets death threats more than anybody, more than the president of the United States. And he doesn't let certain things bother him. But there was a couple of times, like with Cotto and Maidana, he chose to fight a different way just because of what the fans were saying. That's what chatter can do to a disciplined fighter. And him not having his father there, I think he wants to take that out on Kambosos, you know? So yes, it could affect him a little bit, but I think he's smart enough. You never know, but I do think he's smart enough to say, If I do that, if I sit down on my punches and really try to get him out of there, it's going to be in the later rounds after I done lasered him for six or seven rounds.
I'm not sure if you guys noticed during the press conference when George Kambosos said, hey, I tried to help get your father in here. And Devin said, oh, stop lying. No, you didn't, Cap'n. So, in other words, he feels like all those dudes kind of, I don't want to say conspired, but they're not doing that. They're not going out of their way to try to get Bill over there.
Right. You know who doesn't take offense to not being called a power puncher? Feather Fists himself, Sergio Mora.
I knew you were going to say Sergio. I knew you were going to say Sergio. No, that bothers him too.
not as much as others, for sure.
Not now, but when he was fighting, it probably did.
Yes.
Well, he said something during a fighter meeting recently where he said when he was fighting Southpaw, he was a power puncher. I kind of chuckled at that one. I don't know how that's the case. Last thing
did
for
you
guys.
Did you laugh during the meeting?
I always laughed during the meeting.
Maybe he was a power puncher. It's hard to connect if you're not a true Southpaw, so he just didn't land it to show everybody maybe.
No, I don't think
I'm always going to defend Sergio.
Last thing for you guys. The news this week outside of the ring is that Anthony Joshua has changed trainers again. This time he is going with Robert Garcia. Some pictures were taken of Robert over in the UK right now. He is apparently going to be working with Team Joshua. I'm not entirely sure exactly what the dynamic's going to be in the corner of Anthony Joshua before his fight with Alexander Usyk. But, Ak, your reaction to AJ pivoting to Robert Garcia with his fight with Alexander Usyk, at least tentatively scheduled right now for July 23rd.
I mean, my first reaction was, I like it. That's what I said initially. I like the fact that he's actually putting it out there. Okay, this is who I'm going to be with because, you know, we all saw what happened months ago. Like, he was had a tour, a gym tour with different guys. But what I felt in the first Usyk fight, that, you know, AJ should have went in there trying to outbox Usyk. Most people felt that way. He's the bigger, stronger guy. Being aggressive, you would think, easier said than done, but that would be the most effective plan against a guy like Usyk. I think Robert Garcia is a perfect trainer for that type of style. He's very offensive-minded, that of Freddie Roach. So I like the matchup between the trainer and fighter there. Now, in this one training camp, can Robert really put his footprint, you know, his fingerprints on AJ enough for us to see a difference? I don't think we need to see much of a different AJ. AJ has shown that he can be that savage, aggressive heavyweight. We've seen it in the past. I think Robert just has to get it back out of him. So I like it. I'm excited about it. I think we're going to see a slight different AJ.
Barack, what do you think?
Well, for what I think that people don't notice is that it's not like Joshua went in there and tried to outbox Usyk. It's just he didn't seem to be that confident while he was fighting Usyk. Because, listen, it's not like he went in there against Charles Martin and said, I'm going to walk you down and knock you out. He outboxed Charles Martin. And within without boxing him, counterpunching, he lets hard right hands go. He didn't do that this particular fight with Usyk. So it's not like he was just trying to outbox and his outboxing doesn't come with power. His outboxing comes with power. He showed that against Brazil. He outboxed those guys who are not superior boxers than him. So it's not like that. I just think for some reason, he didn't have the confidence to let his right hand go, kind of like how Klitschko against Fury. You know what I mean? And that's the problem. So I just think he needs somebody to reignite that confidence in him so that he can let his hands go, whether he chooses the box or he chooses to walk you down. It doesn't
really
matter.
But Barack, you just proved my point because you said he outboxed those guys. So if he went in the fight with Usyk with that same mind frame, that counterpunch isn't going to work like it did with those guys because he's still trying to outbox Usyk and wait for that shot to land.
Now,
so
see, what I'm
maybe
saying
that's
is that
the wrong game plan.
He threw soft right hands and still wobbled Usyk. That's not the regular Anthony Joshua used to seeing. That's all I'm saying. It has nothing to do with whether he chose to box or not. He did not box normally. That's what I mean. So whether he tried to outbox or not, it wasn't the same Joshua we've seen against Klitschko, against every other fighter, even against Parker. He threw harder right hands. For some reason, these right hands were very, very tentative. They weren't hard. They were arm punches, and it still hurt Usyk. If we just get a different Anthony Joshua who's confident, who says, I am going to win no matter what, then we'll see a different turnout. I won't say better. Whoever wins, wins.
I think this has the potential to be a disaster. I really do.
Why?
Only because, look, he's been trained by Rob McCracken his entire career. That's one style. Months ago, it was reported that Angel Fernandez was going to be his head trainer.
But
Angel
he's
Fernandez
been part of his camp, though. He's been part of his camp for a while.
Right.
Angel Fernandez.
Well,
yeah.
Well, no, no question. But Angel Fernandez, what we know about him is that he has been schooled in the Cuban form of boxing. So if he's taking a more prominent role, I would assume he's trying to put more of his imprint on AJ style. I have no issue with Robert Garcia. I think he should have chosen Robert Garcia as well, but he should have done it 3 months ago. Like, we're now into early June when they're getting started. And you're bringing in a coach, and I know he's been there at various points in the last month or so, whatever it's been, but you're bringing in a coach who's got a completely different style than you're used to months or 7 weeks really before the biggest fight in your career when you take on a pound-for-pound great in Alexander Usyk. Like, I just feel
so
like
you prefer him to stay with McCracken after the last result?
Honestly, at this point, maybe. Like, if you're going to wait for it to get this long, I don't know if you want to shake things up and have all these different voices. And I mentioned this at the top. I don't know who his head trainer is going to be. Everything seems to indicate there's like a co-training committee going on there between Angel.
Maybe that's what he needs.
That's not, but it never works. That never works.
Maybe he needs to be shooken up.
That never works.
I don't think it has anything. I don't think it has anything to do with anything except confidence. I'm trying to tell you, it's like Cotto. Cotto, when he got his first and second loss, he was like, he needed a new trainer just to give him confidence. That's all it was. Nobody really taught him anything different. No one needs to teach Joshua anything different. He just needs to go in there confident to let his hands go like he did in every other fight. Can't we see that he fought Usyk differently than he fought everybody else? And meanwhile,
yeah, but
Usyk
Barack,
is the smallest
Barack,
guy.
You mentioned Cotto just needed confidence. I would push back a little bit on that because Pedro, the Cuban coach, Cotto went with for like a minute. That didn't work. Like that style.
That's when he lost to Trout.
Right. Like that style of training didn't work for Cotto. It wasn't a confidence thing there with Cotto. It's like he went to a coach with a different style. He went to Freddie, who had a more offensive oriented style, and they clicked. Like it, to me, that was as much about strategy
When a guy beat you down like Antonio Margarito did, and even in the second fight, he was getting hurt a lot towards the end. Thank God his eye socket was broken by Pacquiao already. It's hard to have the confidence. It's hard to have that same confidence when Manny Pacquiao knocks you out like that. It's hard to have that confidence. You know what he did? He went and got tattoos. He tried to change his mindset. He tried to get that confidence back. So, yes, it might have been a bad style, but it's really about, even if you have a bad style, there are fighters in there who has bad styles, but they feel like they can never lose. And they're going to give it their all. And if the style ain't working, they'll switch. And that takes confidence.
Yeah, I just feel like there's a lot of cooks in the kitchen right now going into this fight. And is AJ going to be singularly focused when he gets back in the corner between rounds, when he's hearing different advice? Is he going to be comfortable applying that advice in the ring? And again, if he was going up against a significantly lesser opponent, I wouldn't have a problem with it. But he's going up against a great. He's going up against a guy that is legit.
Hey, listen, Chris, let me add something really quick in regards to different trainers. Look, Bill Haney brought up a great point. The fact that his entire career, Devin has worked with so many different trainers, and that made him confident that he took a piece of everybody and he's going to have something special that most fighters don't. So maybe the fact that AJ's been with a few guys, that might make him better. I mean, yes, it could. There's a flip side to that. But what I'm saying is let's be optimistic here. I mean, something about Robert, to Barack's point, is probably making him feel more confident, which is why he went with him. And maybe that's look, gumbo is one of my favorite dishes, and it has all type of ingredients in there. So maybe all of these ingredients might turn into something good.
You know what, though? Like, you know what, Barack, you know what? One other thing about Robert Garcia, like, if I'm AJ, go to Robert's gym. Like, what are you doing staying in the UK? Like, go to Oxnard and train there. Like, get out of your comfort zone. Like, go someplace where you're not this super known figure. I remember Eddie Hearn telling me that when AJ went to San Diego to work briefly with Canelo's team, like, he was out in one of those parks and nobody recognized him. Like, right. Go to a place where you're anonymous, where the focus is simply on boxing. That's another part of this. Like, look, Robert Garcia is a great trainer. I don't know why Robert's going there. Why isn't AJ and his team coming to him? Like, that to me.
That's what I assume. I assume that he would be in Cali. So,
no,
that's a personal preference. You never know what helps a fighter, you know, and you don't have to acclimate to the time change out here in the United States, and then go back and then acclimate to the Europe time. So in the UAE. So it's like, I just think it's probably best for them to stay closer to that time zone and just train with somebody who gives you confidence. That's all.
I suppose, but he's also not flying middle seat coach back to the UK. Like, he's probably hopping on a private jet with a flatbed that he can take a nap on before he gets there. So that's a different story altogether. Fellas, always great to do this with you guys. You can check out Akin Barak on the DAZN Boxing Show every weekday over on DAZN. Enjoy it, guys. We'll do it again.
All right. Take it easy. Thanks for having
us. Thank you, brother.
When we come back, my conversation with Stephen Fulton.
This is it. We've got an Amex Platinum Pro on our hands, ladies and gentlemen. We haven't seen anyone relax like this before in the Centurion Lounge. Is he connecting to complimentary Wi-Fi? Oh, my. Look at that. He is. And you will not believe where he's going next. The Amex dedicated card member entrance for the win. Unbelievable.
When you get travel perks with Amex Platinum, you're part of the action. That's the powerful backing of American Express. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/withAmex.
Attention all wrestling aficionados. Wrestling with Freddie makes its triumphant return for an electrifying fourth season. This is Freddie Prinze Jr., and I am beyond thrilled to announce that our wrestling extravaganza is back, and joining me once again is the one and only Jeff Dye.
Get ready as we highlight the most jaw-dropping matches, dissect the fiercest feuds, and uncover the latest twists and turns in the world of pro wrestling.
We're dusting off our legendary side quests and unleashing a barrage of brand new segments that will keep you guys on the edge of your seat, like our talks on Unsanctioned Thursdays.
Freddie, you know we got to give the people what they want. This season, we have an all-star lineup of special guests who are going to be gracing our podcast, bringing with them their own unique insights, experiences, and all of that in the world of pro wrestling and beyond.
Whether you're a seasoned wrestling veteran or a fresh-faced newcomer, we promise an experience like no other. So buckle up, wrestling fans. Listen to Wrestling with Freddie as part of the My Cultura podcast network, available on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
MTV's official Challenge podcast is back for another season. And guess what? So are we. Just in case you forgot, I'm Tori Deal. I'm a 6-time finalist and a Challenge champion.
And I'm Anissa Ferrer, and I've been gracing your screens for the last 2 decades. I am a veteran challenger and Challenge All-Star.
And speaking of All-Stars, All-Stars 4 is finally here.
I'm going to be honest. I literally thought this day was never going to come.
Well, the Challenge gods have answered our prayers, and we're going to be right here along with you fans covering every episode on the podcast.
And this season takes it to a whole new level. Old school legends, modern power players, redemption seekers, and ex-lovers are all competing in Cape Town, South Africa for the prize of $300,000.
Anyone can win, relationships matter, and only one all-star will claim the title of Challenge Champion.
Listen to MTV's official Challenge podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Fight fans, take your best shot with $200 in free bets guaranteed when you place your first $5 bet. It doesn't matter if your fighter gets knocked out or tapped out. New customers get an instant $200 in free bets on your first bet of $5. Just sign up with the promo code BOXING to bet on all the biggest boxing matches and UFC fights. Choose from the money line to the method of victory and so much more. To get your $200 in free bets guaranteed, just sign up with the promo code BOXING on the FanDuel Sportsbook app. All right, Stephen Fulton is the unified 122-pound champion. On Saturday, he will defend his titles against Daniel Roman. That's a fight you can see on Showtime, and Stephen joins me here on the show. Stephen, I was just thinking about this before you came on. Like, what I love about the lighter weight classes is that everything seems like it's a big fight. Like, every single fight you guys are in is significant. You win a title against Angelo Leo, you unify against Brandon Figueroa, and now you get Roman, who has won 2 fights in a row since a really close loss to MJ Akhmadaliev. Does it feel that way to you, like that every fight you're in is a significant fight?
Yeah, it feels. It is that way. I don't want to say it feels, because it is that way. And I'm the only guy that's doing it in the division anyway. No other guys are, you know, doing that in this division.
Why is it important for you to do it?
I feel like this is just the route that I wanted to take, as well as me knowing I can defeat these guys, me knowing I can beat them.
You, I saw, heard you say earlier that the last few fights, people have seen different sides of Stephen Fulton. What do you mean by that?
I mean, they seen the side that, you know, a lot of pressure early in my career, a lot of pressure fighters will come and try to out pressure me. But now that they seen that I can do that too, and now all of them are second guessing, should we just pressure this guy? Because I have outstanding inside work as well. Not just applying the pressure, but more so the nice inside shots, the body, head, whatever. I can do whatever. I'm versatile.
Was that a decision you made to kind of show that side of you?
Yes, that was the decision that I made. I feel like it was a decision that that needed to be made as well and needed to be shown, a side that needed to be shown.
Why did it need to be shown?
Because, you know, you all, we're fighters, so you don't want to get used to continue to do one style. You need to, you know, utilize every fight aspect that you have, every aspect you have in this fight game. So showing that was like, oh, all right, damn, he could do that too? But then he could do this too. What I wonder what else can he do? And right now, that's where I'm at with it right now. I'm just showing all of my, well, a lot of my tools. Not everything, but a lot of my tools.
You think after that Figueroa fight, people will approach fights with you differently, knowing you can do a whole bunch of different things?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. I heard you say recently that you have something of a love-hate relationship with boxing. What did you mean by that?
I mean, I feel like sometimes that can be self-explanatory, but it's just, boxing has its ups and downs. It has its moments where it could chew you up and spit you out, or it can make for a full feast.
So when do you love it the most, and when do you hate it the most?
I love it the most when I'm fighting and just regularly training. I hate it the most is when I get in camp sometimes. Like, making weight is like one of the main things I hate about this. And I think every fighter could agree with me with that. But this camp was a little different. I was a lot more happy and a lot more just willing to do the work. So this time it wasn't a love-hate thing, as well as the media can make you, you know, make it a hate thing as well. Mm. And the people...
Which part of it?
With the people, the outside people within the sport, not the, you know, not the ones that's behind the camera, but more so the audience, the fans, things like that.
Well, you got to stay off social media, Stephen. That's the worst place on earth.
No,
you know that, right?
I can deal with that, though. It is. It isn't just the social media with me. It isn't just that.
Mm-hmm. I've heard you say that making weight was a lot easier for this fight than it was for Figueroa. Why is that?
I feel like I did things the right way. Figueroa fight, I messed up the camp. I messed up that aspect on my own. Like, that wasn't nobody but me. I messed that up. But I feel like this time it was a lot more better. You know, I had a nutritionist, so everything was greater. I got stronger towards the end of the camp. I got stronger, and I'm eating up until now. I'm still eating. I'm still drinking. I just feel great.
Is this your first time with a nutritionist?
Yes.
Why'd you decide now? I mean, I think all boxers should have nutritionists. It always seems to pay off for them. Sometimes they're expensive. I get it. But it always seems to pay off for boxers when they add someone like that to their camp.
I feel like I did it this camp because my body felt last camp. I knew it wasn't the right way to do it.
Mm-hmm. So you went to this fight with Roman, who's a very good fighter. I mean, I was ringside for that Akmedalia fight, and it was close. It was a close loss for Danny. What do you think of Roman as a fighter?
He's a great fighter. He's a good fighter. That's what I think of him. He's a good fighter.
Mm-hmm. What kind of style do you think he's going to bring out of you?
I feel like he's going to bring out my defensive side.
Mm-hmm. More the counterpuncher than the aggressor or the inside fighter?
No, I'm always be aggressive, but more so that defense and, you know, maybe a little bit of that countering as well, because he's a counter fighter. He's just a counter fighter. I don't think he's the fighter that's going to go get it, but maybe that could change in this fight. You know, I feel like this is his last opportunity to, you know, be on top.
I think you're right about that, for sure. He had that fight with Akmedalia. Is there any part in your mind, because I know you want that Akmedalia fight, but is there any part of you that wants to beat Roman more convincingly than Akhmadaliyev did?
Yes. Not just more than Akhmadaliyev did, but just show him himself, like, it's no comparison. Like, we're separate.
Mm-hmm. You I heard you say you've rewatched the Figueroa fight a whole bunch of times. Why do you do it? Why do you rewatch it?
I like watching that fight now. I enjoy watching that fight. It was a hell of a fight. It was a great fight. And I like some of the things that I was doing. The way my body felt and everything, when I came out the ring, I just was like, man, I felt like SHIT. But when I went back and I looked at it, I'm like, damn, I was doing that. Like, damn, that was a nice fight. Or I can see why they gave him this round. Or I was winning that round, but he had tried to get it back in later rounds. I'm like, so I'm very observant of it. I'm very aware of a lot that was going on. So, but once I start watching, I'm like, damn, this is a good fight. And it just gave me that extra confidence. Like, damn, I went through that. Like, I overcame that. Oh, yeah, I can't wait to fight this guy because he's not going to bring that type of pressure. And if he do, we all know I'm ready for it.
No, it was a fantastic fight. One of the best fights of the year. And I know you've been, you know, when you say you like to rewatch it now, I find it interesting because I know you've been irritated by people that have said, well, why aren't we seeing the rematch? Why is that not happening? You've said I won the fight. Why do I need to have to argue about the rematch?
No, for sure, for sure. Like, wait, why y'all coming to me about it? Y'all come to him. He's a loser, and he acted like one.
Mm. Did that frustrate you? How he acted afterwards?
No, it ain't frustrating me. It was, I understood it more so than ever. That's why I didn't take it to the next level. I understood it. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's his first loss. It was a close fight. But then when I rewatched it, it wasn't that close, but it was still a close fight. Mm. So, you have to understand certain people that tasted their first time, their first defeat. Everything could be frustrating. It was a pro Figueroa crowd. So it was like, I understand it.
Oh, and you know, too, and I've experienced this with fighters before, like, you know, his whole team, his whole camp must have been like, you won the fight. Mm-hmm. It only makes a guy feel like he won it.
Exactly.
You know, even more if people are telling them that.
And even if they go rewatch that fight and this camp still tell me one, they retarded.
You said you actually want to watch that fight back with him at some point, I believe.
Oh, yeah, that'd be lit. Get us in the same room together, rewatch the fight so I can break it down to him while I'm eating some chips or something. Yo, look at that shot, bro. You wasn't hit nothing. Like, look at it. Like, you really think you won it? You really delusional. Like,
it
don't have to be violent. Like, it don't have to be violent. Yeah. We already fought.
Yeah. I like that. That feels like tremendous Showtime content. Like
exactly. That right there lets you know I got the mindset. Like, I know how to promote things. I know how to, like, I'm good at those type of things.
They should do that for every fighter. After every close fight, have the two guys sit down in a room and rewatch together and see if they come to common ground.
That'd be lit.
On that. Last question for you. I mean, you know, Daniel Roman is right in front of you. Is it Akhmadaliev or bust for you after that, or move up? I mean, is there anything left for you at 122 if you can't get that fight with Akhmadaliev?
I mean, I don't know. I think I want that fight, though.
I know you do. It's a great fight.
Yeah, I don't know. I would have to wait and think that out, like, hard, really think that out.
But you're not going to wait. Or would you wait for Inoue or Donaire or those guys to decide to want to move up?
I'm big myself. So if I wouldn't wait for MJ, I wouldn't wait for those guys.
Mm-hmm. Do you think that, I mean, boxing politics suck. I mean, they prevent fights. Do you feel like boxing politics would stop you and MJ from getting in the ring?
No, I think we can make that happen. Mm-hmm. I feel like it'd be up to MJ and them, though. Mm-hmm. But I think we can make it happen.
Yeah. Hey, it'd be great to see an undisputed fight between you two. And that'll be yet another big fight in a row for you as you keep this train rolling along as well. Steven, good luck on Saturday, man. It's a great fight. You and Daniel Roman live on Showtime. Good to catch up with you.
No, likewise.
When we come back, my conversation with George Kambosos.
There are some things that are too good to keep a secret. Like how your Amex Platinum card helps you have the perfect trip. I'd like to check into the Centurion Lounge. Or how it seems like you always get those hard-to-snag tables.
Ooh, yum.
And how you get the most out of select can't-miss events. With access to the Centurion Lounge, Resi Priority Notified, and Amex card member benefits at select events, you'll have to share. That's the powerful backing of American Express. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/withAmex.
All right, on Saturday, the undisputed lightweight championship will be settled once and for all when Devin Haney challenges George Kambosos in Australia, down under, for all the 135-pound belts. George Kambosos, of course, coming off a huge win over Teofimo Lopez late last year. And George joins me here on the show. George, before I get into your preparation for this fight, What has the last 6 months or so been like for you as you have gone from, you know, relatively unknown contender to four belt world champion?
Yeah, look, it's been amazing. The support has been, right up there. The whole country behind me, you know, a lot of the world behind me that was so impressed from that big victory I had with Lopez. But my tunnel vision, my obsession got more. I became champion. I became hungrier. So I got to build my own private gym, which was real fun. And that's what I put in the work throughout this whole camp, throughout this whole time. I got to really continue to perfect my craft. But life did get busier. A lot more people wanted to meet me.
You did get right back in the gym. I mean, following you on social media, it was probably a week maybe after you got back to Australia and you were right back in.
Actually, I was back in the gym when I went to the Devin Haney, JoJo Diaz fight. I was training in the MGM Grand nonstop because I'm never content. I'm always trying to get better and better, and that's the kind of fighter I am. So even while I was scoping out my opponents after my big win against Lopez, I was not enjoying, you know, the high life. I was not partying. I was not celebrating. I was back into the gym because that's what I do.
You wrapped that Devin Haney fight, like you said, against JoJo Diaz. Devin won that fight. For a while, you thought you were going to get Vasily Lomachenko. Of course, it didn't work out. Lomachenko's got his situation in the Ukraine. How did you feel at the time about pivoting from Lomachenko to Devin Haney?
Yeah, no problem. I always said that either Devin Haney or Lomachenko, whoever wanted the fight, whoever made the best deal and everything made sense, I was happy to fight them both. No problem. So I got a lot of respect for Lomachenko. Obviously, he went to the war. He's fighting a bigger fight. No problem. Devin Haney was one of the guys that we wanted as well. And he came to the party. Respect to that. And here we are.
You had the leverage as the four belt champion at lightweight. And you used it. You got a multi-fight deal effectively in this situation. You're having the fight in Australia. Why was it important for you to have this title defense in Australia?
Yeah, of course. You know, I had to go earn the belts off Teofimo Lopez in his backyard. I've had to do it, you know, countless years back to back. So I deserve this. I deserve to have the duel the way I wanted it and the way it makes most sense, you know, for my future, my family. But for me, I love to fight. And being so passionate about fighting, especially here in Australia, I had to bring this back to Australia. It had to be here. I had to defend my belts at home. Nothing else mattered but fighting here in Australia because it's been a long time. So now I get to have my people supporting me. And that's the most amazing part about it because they get to really get to see world-class fighting. That's what it's about.
I got to give you credit, George. You are, I think, masterful at the pre-fight buildup. I mean, you got deep under Teofimo Lopez's skin in that week before the Lopez fight. And it feels like you're at it again. I mean, when I hear you say things like, you're a rat, you're an informant, I'm like, George is doing that for a reason. Like, he wants to get Devin Haney out of his comfort zone and get him to make some mistakes. Is there any of that to some of the things that you say?
I'm just having fun. I'm having fun, but I'm just telling the truth. Everything I said in the Lopez fight was the truth. And what I'm saying here is the truth. You know, obviously, Lopez is aware of it. He's gone and told me certain things, nothing to do with his boxing skills, nothing to do with things that he does in the ring, things that he was doing outside of the ring. So it is what it is. That's what it is. And it's out there. I know it. I saw it in his eyes. It ruffled a few feathers. And so be it. We got a fight to handle on Sunday. But if it's in his head, that's beautiful.
It's your choice of words, though. It's great. Rat and informant. You know that's going to like kind of poke him a little bit and get him a little irritated because those words are loaded words, you know, when it comes to situations like that.
Yeah, they are. But you know, everyone that saw me after that presser, they said, "Man, that is a rat. That is an informant. That's a boxing informant." So that's history there. I don't know if there's ever been a boxing informant, but there he is there.
So in preparing for Devin Haney, has he been more or less complicated to prepare for than Teofimo Lopez was?
No, I take every fighter and every champion with full respect, and I prepare unbelievable to make sure that there are no stones unturned. I brought in an unbelievable sparring partner in Albert Bell, who is 22-0, number 4 or 5 in the world, you know, super sharp. So him having other good sparring partners, well, Olympians, amateur prospects, amateur stars, contenders, the whole lot in sparring and training, as well as my American team for 7-8 weeks with me, full team, Xander Zayas as well. So we have left no stone unturned. I have invested, again, in myself to make sure that there are no stones unturned, and we'll be ready.
Teofimo Lopez came out really looking to knock you out in the first round. He wanted to one-punch you into the ground in that fight, and you took advantage of that. You were able to outbox him, put him down early, and change the dynamic of the fight pretty early. Devin Haney is more boxer than puncher. Are you expecting a very different kind of fight?
Yeah, whatever he wants to bring to the table, if he wants to run and move, I've fought runners and movers. I've beat them well. People underestimate my boxing skills and my boxing abilities. So whatever he wants to do, no problem. Maybe I'm in his head, he's going to come forward like a man possessed. So we'll see. Whatever he wants to do, we are fully prepared, and I will win this fight, victory by any means.
Do you feel more or less confident now that you've won the belts? I mean, what impact have the belts have on your confidence?
I've always been very confident. That's no lie. Everyone knows that. I think if I didn't have this confidence, I wouldn't be able to get to this position. But winning the championship belts, going through that 12-round war with Teofimo Lopez, a puncher like himself, in his hometown, that elevates you even more. That confidence grows even more. And now I know, and the world knows, something I knew deep down inside me, that I am a world champion. I'm ready for anybody, and I am elite. So the confidence has grown many levels, and I'm very excited for this Sunday.
You know, people have asked Devin how he's going to feel fighting in front of 30, 40, 50,000, however many it is in that stadium. Will he be overwhelmed by it? I mean, it's a big crowd for you. They'll be there supporting you, but how do you feel you'll react to that kind of atmosphere?
Yeah, look, it's going to be an amazing crowd. I know there's already over 45,000 tickets gone. It's going to be huge and very exciting. So for me, it's motivating. It's inspiring. I haven't had this opportunity to fight in front of my people for a very long time, especially in a stadium like this. For him, let's see how he handles it, but he's got to handle what's in front of him. And that's me. The crowd can't win fights for him or for me. So it's me and him in that ring, and that's what I'm excited about to get my hands on.
Yeah, it'll be an early start for a fight like this to take advantage of prime time in the U.S. Any adjustments you have to make because of that?
Well, I've been sparring my whole life around that same time anyway. I'm always training early in the morning or midday or in that afternoon period. So really, this is natural to me. For him, it might be a little bit different, but for me, this is no problem. And look, I'm a warrior. If he wants to fight right now, if he wants to fight whatever time, no.
Are you eager to prove that you are not kind of a one-hit wonder, that you didn't just, as some people suggest, like got Teofimo on a bad night? How much does that gnaw at you, if at all, about proving that you're more than just one fight?
Yeah, that doesn't bother me. For me, I know who I am. I know what I am as a fighter, as a warrior. And I just keep proving these people wrong. I've always been an underdog my whole career, and I'll continue to prove them wrong. So if they say that, no problem. I don't really listen to it too much. I'm the champion. I've got all the belts, and I'm filling out a whole stadium.
No question.
In a boardwalk. It's amazing.
No question. People, you know, in the U.S., you know, Tank Davis has talked about how, well, when Devin wins, I'll fight him for all the belts. I assume that you've got a different opinion on that, of course, but like how you watch Tank Davis fight, like, is that a fight you'd be interested down the line?
Yeah, 100%. Great win to him. Respect there. But again, he fought Rolly Romero. So, you know, you can't take too much into it, except for it was a great knockout. Look, I'm so focused on Devin Haney. I will handle my business on Sunday. But there is another guy that will get this shot after this, and that is Vasily Lomachenko. And that's a respect there, because he had this shot. If he can't get out of the war, then no problem. We look at Tank or Ryan Garcia or any of these guys, or any of the high-level guys, but my full focus on Devin Haney.
You don't want a nice, easy fight if you win something like this? Get yourself a little homecoming walk?
This is the homecoming. This is the... I can't do that to myself. I can't do that to the fans of boxing. I think we've had enough of that. What for? I'm a warrior. I lay it all on the line. I fight the best of the best. And when it's all said and done, everyone will know that Cambosis never took an easy road, never took a step backwards, and gave the boxing world, you know, the best fights possible. And I think more people need to follow this, what I'm doing at the moment.
I couldn't agree more. I mean, I think there's a lot of people that didn't believe you when you said, I'm going straight into a Lomachenko fight, a Devin Haney fight, a big fight right away. I think there were a lot of people that, as often happens in boxing, expected you to take some kind of victory lap fight right at home. What was it that drove you, you know, into that big fight?
I just, you know, the journey that I've had, the hard years that I've had, how can I go to anything less? How can I get to the top now and start to milk it for what it is? I have to fight the best. I can't look at myself in the mirror if I did anything less. So I think fighting the top guys and beating the top guys, especially when I'm against it again, when I'm an underdog, that's what motivates me. That's what inspires me even more. And that's what brings out the best in Ferocious Kambosos. Fighting the best brings out the best in me. So that's the way I'll continue my career, and it will be that easy road out.
Well, it's going to be a terrific fight. George, always good to catch up with you. Hopefully we see you back in the U.S. Sometime soon.
Yeah, I'm sure. Look, I love fighting the U.S., and I've spent plenty of time in America. I've fought many times in the U.S., so I'm sure I will come and headline a big show defending all my belts in the U.S. sometime soon. But for now, Australia, super fights, stadium fights is our focus.
Great to see you, George. Good luck on Saturday.
Thank you, Chris. I appreciate it.
When we come back, this week's picks brought to you by FanDuel. All right, time now for this week's picks brought to you by our friends at FanDuel. And this week, I am locked in on the George Kambosos-Devin Haney fight, the undisputed lightweight championship taking place in Australia. And the odds for this are very close. Kambosos plus 138, Devin Haney minus 168. Now, you heard me say earlier in the pod, all things being equal, I would bet big on Devin Haney. I think he's the better boxer. Simple as that. And Devin Haney, under optimal circumstances, is better than George Kambosos. But we do know coming in, these are not optimal circumstances. The fight is in Kambosos' backyard in Australia. There will be tens of thousands of fans cheering for Kambosos. And Haney, of course, will not have his trainer in his corner for that fight. His father, Bill, not there. Ben Davison, his assistant trainer, not there. So he's going in a little bit handicapped for this fight. But I still like Devin Haney. I think Devin Haney has pound-for-pound talent. And as good as Kambosos looked against Teofimo Lopez last year, we have only seen him look that good once. So if Devin Haney stays within himself, I believe Devin Haney is going to win this fight. So take Devin Haney to win. And Devin Haney by decision. He's only plus 100 to win by decision, but I think that is the safest bet. Devin is not a big puncher, and I don't believe that Kambosos, after going the distance against Lopez, is going to get stopped by Devin Haney. So my picks this week, Haney by decision, the new undisputed lightweight championship. Those are this week's picks brought to you by FanDuel. That's it for this week's episode. My thanks to DAZN's Achan Barak, to Stephen Fulton, to George Kambosos for joining the show. As always, subscribe, rate, review this podcast on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, wherever you download podcasts. And I'll see you next week.
It's Freddie Prinz Jr. and Jeff Dye back in the ring. Wrestling with Freddie makes its triumphant return for an electrifying fourth season. Hey, Jeff. Are you ready to rumble our way into an all-new season of Wrestling with Freddy?
You better believe I have. I've been practicing my body slams, and I'm jacked.
All right, don't go injuring yourself now. We'll be highlighting the best stories and matches of the week in wrestling from AEW, WWE, and have one-on-one talks with the best talents in the world of pro wrestling.
Listen to Wrestling with Freddy on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
MTV's official Challenge podcast is back for another season.
And so are we.
I'm Tori Deal.
And I'm Anissa Ferreira.
The wait is over, guys. All Stars 4 is finally here.
And this season takes it to a whole new level. Old school legends, modern power players, and ex-lovers are all competing in Cape Town, South Africa for the prize of $300,000.
And we're going to be right here along with you fans, covering every episode on the podcast.
Listen to MTV's official Challenge podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
If you love sports and true crime, then there's a new podcast from executive producer Dan Patrick and hosted by me, Jay Harris, that you won't want to miss. Playing Dirty Sports Scandals. Each week, I'm squeezing the juiciest details from some of the biggest sports scandals ever. I'm talking Marcus Dixon, Olympic gymnastics, Cain Velasquez, salacious Super Bowl-level scandals. Join me on the dark side of sports by listening to Playing Dirty Sports Scandals on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.